Andy, I got a two.
A two. Chris, the topic we'll be discussing today is, how do you run a good one-shot for non-gamers?
Oh, that is a super good question. Hello and welcome to Roll for Topic, a roundtable discussion about topics related to running role-playing games. I'm Chris Salzman.
I'm Andy Rao.
Andy, I have something really exciting to talk about today. Okay. My daughter is 9 years old, and one of her friends down the street has just gotten the starter set, starter kit, starter box. I'm not sure what they're calling it these days.
Yeah.
For D&D. Going to be playing on Sunday. Yeah, so it's going to be her, this other kid, and then I think two or three other kids are also going to play. They're very excited, and I'm very excited for them.
That is really amazing. Cool. Will you be able to like peek in on them or eavesdrop on this? This is a true real learning experience, say from experience.
Yeah, I might be running the game. I'm not 100% sure. So we're gonna see. I think I'm going to make myself available to run the game. And then if it looks like they've totally got it in hand, or you know, one of them's interested in just sort of doing it, I will probably find a way to step away or like, you know, hand the reins over as quickly as possible.
That is awesome. Yes.
Yeah, it's really interesting to me that like, yeah, it's still right. Like, okay. Like we were talking on the Discord, someone posted a link about how, you know, a couple of like, you know, high profile people from Wizards of the Coast just left the, you know, D&D product. Yeah. Like, you know, what, Christopher Perkins, and I can't remember the other guy's name, feel really bad about that.
Yeah, but it's the other big,
yeah, the other big wig, right? Again, like that kind of raises all these questions about like, well, like, what is D&D anymore? Like, you know, where is it going? Like, what's the product release schedule and all that? And like, that's stuff that you and I like to talk about, but for 9 year olds, they don't care, right? Yeah. Like, they're just like, yep. Like, what do I need to play is sort of like where they're at. So like the dad was texting me and we were, and I was kind of chatting. I was like, you know, he's like, oh, like, you know, like, what do we need? You know, it's like, I've got a 3D printer. I can, you know, 3D print minis and stuff. I'm like,
ooh,
like, just get the box. If you want to, we can go buy some dice, like, because buying dice is really fun.
Yeah.
Other, like, you got everything in the box and we can just use coins or, you know, crumpled up pieces of paper or something like that for the minis, you know, sort of like whatever we need there. But it was just, it's so fun seeing like all this energy get activated around like there's this game that they've heard about that they know that they want to play. Like,
yeah,
it was,
yeah,
just all that stuff. It's just like what do we, like, yeah, like, do we need to 3D print stuff? Do we need to like do this and that? And like, it's like, no, like, we just, we'll get it and we'll play. Like, you know, we'll take it from there. And it's just, yeah, it's exciting. So I'm pumped.
I've gone through this experience with my kids as well. Mm-hmm. And I'm just curious what you think. Do you think it is better that the kids be left mostly on their own to figure it out? Mm-hmm. Or do you think it is better that somebody who knows what they're doing runs the game to kind of lay down, mm-hmm, how the structure works?
I really don't know. Like, okay, so like as a child of like the 80s and 90s, right, the way that this would have happened for me is like, you know, you guys got the game, go play the game, right? Like, you know,
yeah,
like the thought of like a parent interceding and like sitting down to run a game for us, like, I don't think that would have crossed our minds at all. It's even like a possibility at that point, right? Like, I mean, like, we were playing Magic the Gathering at, I don't know, 7 or 8 years old or something like, mm-hmm, that, and no adult played with us. It was just, we were just kind of figuring it out and doing all, yeah, the rules, yeah, wrong and stuff, and it was a great time, right? So like, part of me is like, maybe we should just like put him in the basement and, you know, keep an ear out just in case there's, you know, a fight breaking out, but otherwise just like let them figure it out. But another part of me is like, you know, it would be really helpful, like, for the first time, if they didn't have to struggle with some of the rules. At the same time, it's like, if I know enough to sort of run it for them. But I do want to get to the point where they don't think of D&D as, oh, this is a thing that we need an adult to play. I want it to be like, this is a thing, yeah, that we can play together. Yeah.
I've always leaned towards the give them the books and let them play it in whatever, mm-hmm, whatever form in their mind, it, like whatever D&D, yeah, means to them, like let them play it. And that has mostly worked. But then just in like the last month, my son, who is on the young side of teenage, mm-hmm, it came to me and he's like, I don't really want to play in my friend's D&D game anymore. And so I was like, okay, that's fine. You know, I was kind of asking what's going on. Is this a problem with the person or the game is boring or whatever? And it comes down to their GM just doesn't really know how to GM real well. So he thinks it's funny to put like the most powerful monsters in every room in the dungeon and then it kills everyone. And, you know, and, yeah, you can see how that would be really delightful for kids.
Yeah.
But you can also see how it'd be like, okay, well, if you're going to be doing this every week or something, here's how you actually be like a good GM.
Mm-hmm.
And at least let some of these best practices inform this, you know?
Yeah.
So I do think like a model to follow is helpful,
mm-hmm.
but yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. It's tricky. I think like, I mean, I do think they're probably starting in the right spot to just get the box set, right? You know, mm-hmm. kind of play through that.
Yep.
Right. Cause I've looked at that adventure. Is it a Dragon of Ice Spire Peak? That sounds about right.
Yep.
And I
ice
think,
is in there, spire
yeah,
is in there.
Yeah, there's a dragon. Right, it's perfect. Right, it's got everything. and I think I've looked at that, and my memory of it is like it's somewhat on the rails, which I think is probably good for that age group of just like this is what you're gonna be doing. So I don't know. I think I do want to, if I am involved, I want to extract myself as quickly as possible. Cause like, to be honest, I would sort of rather be playing D&D with all the parents there too. Like,
yeah,
so maybe
for sure.
We have like a parent game going at the same time that the kids are playing or something like
that. Yeah.
But it's interesting. So what I've found is with talking to other parents is that there's all these little like pockets of like D&D games happening in the neighborhoods. So there was another dad that I was talking to that said that there's, you know, a couple kids that just keep showing up at his house to play with his kid. So they'll play D&D for, you know, whatever they call D&D. They'll play that for a few hours and then, you know, it's bedtime, they go away, and then they wake up the next morning, they're there bright and early.
Yep.
You know, like, yeah, at 8 a.m. to play all day again. I'm like, that is fantastic. Like, that is, you know, exactly what I want to be happening. And so my understanding is that like this is happening sort of around the neighborhood, so I'm happy to see like another one start up, and like I just can kind of see like just with the way parenting is these days, this is not going to be turned into a big long rant about parenting, but like parenting is very like hands-on these days, and there's a lot of like emphasis on, you know, protection and stuff like that, so kids just don't have like, they can't go jump on their bike and go ride 2 miles away or whatever, like everything's got to be within the neighborhood, and like that's good and bad, probably mostly bad for a lot of reasons, but I'm really trying to push my daughter and my kids and like the other kids in the neighborhood to like do these more like just the kids meet up and figure it out sort of things. And I think this is like a good gateway into like, hey, like you can't go jump on your bike and ride 2 miles, but you can go around the corner to, you know, his house and you guys can go in the basement and play D&D for hours at a time, right? And like that's something that's good and social and something you guys can coordinate as well. So like it makes me excited from like both a like, oh, this is a cool nerd thing, and also like from a like, this is a good parenting thing.
Yeah.
Parenting thing too. So.
My son, I also am not going to do a big parenting rant because that's dumb, but my son is going to summer school at like a new school he hasn't gone to, and he bikes there because he's pretty close. And the first day of school, we got a phone call from the school. They're like, is he allowed to bike home like by himself? They're like, we have never had anyone like any kid bike home. So one quick piece of advice for the kids, I will just say, you are correct, and that the way is to like, do you need a dragon? Here's a Coke, a Diet Coke can, this is the dragon, right? That's the way to go. However, I will say, if you have the budget, miniatures that the kids get to keep like goes a long way in my experience. Like, if you are up for it, 30 minutes of miniature painting before the game, you have a couple paints on hand, they slather their miniatures, they look horrific but also amazing at the same time. And then they get to take that miniature home. Like, I just want to throw that out there, is that might be pretty good for that age range. So
that is good. Yeah, I will ask around. We've got a couple people who are, you know, friends of the podcast, who've been on the podcast, who are into 3D printing. I might just ask them for like, hey, is there a file that I can just print? Because I've also got a 3D printer that I rarely use, but I just like, can I just print out, you know, 10 minis that they can just use on the table, like pretty basic things.
Far be it from me to be a shill for like Wizards of the Coast or whatever, but their range of plastic miniatures is pretty good and pretty cheap. Like, and they've got every combination of like species and class, you know, imaginable. So,
That's good.
I spent a long time hunting down all of their Tabaxi, that's the cat person, miniatures at a certain point in my life. So,
All right. That's great. Cool. All right. Yeah. Well, I just wanted to mention that. I'm super excited.
That's exciting. And I expect, you know, I look forward to report next time, next episode or sometime soon.
Yeah. So then the other thing I know we, before we get into our topic that I wanted to mention. So yeah, so I just finished a book called Questland by Carrie Vaughn. This book, I ultimately didn't like love this book when it came down to it, but I did think it was a really interesting exercise in sort of like, what sort of book can you write if you just sort of assume sort of in the, like, I'm going to compare this to Ready Player One, but it is much better than Ready Player One. But like, yeah, if you can kind of assume like this baseline, like geek and nerd knowledge of stuff.
By the way, like, yeah, every now and then, I use Goodreads pretty religiously. Yeah. And every now and then, just to humble myself, I look back at the 5-star review I gave to Ready Player One. And I just, yeah. I'm not going to change it because that's the coward way. Okay,
yeah.
Carry on.
Yeah. Yeah, totally rad and totally does not stand up to any scrutiny. But so Questland, right? Again, like, ultimately I didn't love it for various reasons that are mostly a me problem, but like it was really interesting. Like, it had like, I don't know, like 5 nerdy references per page. Like, every chapter was like a famous quote from like Lord of the Rings or, you know, some, you know, 80s or 90s like fantasy mm-hmm. movie, stuff like that. Yeah, and it was really great. And like, there was she very specifically inserted characters into the story that like were not nerds, so that like the main character could kind of like either explain this sort of stuff or be like, you just don't understand like why this is important to me, right? Like, it was like, yeah, and I think it was like maybe the first depiction of like being a nerd in which it felt very, very like true, but also like, I don't know, expansive in a way where she was like, the main character kept inviting these people that like did not share these experiences with her to enjoy and engage with it. Hmm. Whereas Ready Player One, it's very much just like, it's like a litany of like, hey, like, don't you understand 80s reference? Like, you're so dumb that you don't understand 80s reference. Like, mm-hmm. you're like, how dare you, versus like, oh, like, this is why this is important to me. Like, this helps me understand sort of like the world and like interacting with it and things like that. So that's what I'll say about Questland. I don't know if I'd really recommend it necessarily, but like, yeah, but it was kind of a cool thing to read, I think, in 2025, where I do feel like what being a nerd has fractured in so many different ways. Like yeah. There isn't like this common canon or like these things that like everybody sort of assumes that if you're into this stuff that you've seen this or that, or you've read this or that, or you play this particular game, like those sorts of things. Like, I think we've maybe left that golden age. Maybe we'll get back to it at some point, but like, yeah, like, anyway, so this book is very much written for people of our age, I guess. Yeah. I should say. Yeah. So yeah, it was good. Yeah, I'm glad I read it. It was also very fun to kind of contrast it to The Goldfinch, like, so going from like a very high-minded literary novel to this, which is very much like pop pulp, you know, pulp adventure, like that. And so I'm rolling straight from that into The Gunslinger, which I know you will be very excited about.
Okay. So I have no idea if you're going to love this or hate it. I'd say there's like a 40% chance you're going to just hate it. Yeah. I am the two novels I'm reading right now are a Pynchon novel and the worst Dune like prequel novel I've like you could possibly imagine.
Could you imagine if Pynchon got to write a Dune novel? I would love to see that. Yeah, it'd be all about like the janitor on Arrakis who has to deal with like the cleanup after one of these murder dinners.
Yes, totally. Yeah, I go from this book, it's like, I mean, my pace through it is just so sluggish because I have to take time with each sentence just to unpack it and understand what he's saying, and I switch over and it's like, sandworms are large worms that live in the sand.
Yes. Oh, I love it.
so hey, I had not to keep putting off our topic, which I'm excited to talk about, but I have something I want to bring up too, because I recently took a road trip to a city I'd never been to, yes. and to, if I can use a term that I think Minecraft kind of made mainstream, not Chicken Jockey. Okay. Lord help us. Yeah. I still don't know what that is, and
I'm rewatching it with my daughter, and like, so that moment is like, you know, it's supposed to be like this big moment that everybody like yells about, and it is like a nothing of a moment. It's like, so anyway, continue.
I made my saving throw. I will not talk about the Minecraft movie. I have opinions. But okay.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. So I visited a new biome, Chris.
Oh, okay. Yes.
I feel like, you know, I have lived in or spent time in most of the types of environment that the continental U.S. has to offer, except I have never been to a swamp. I mean, except maybe just breezingly, like traveling through an area. So this is the first time I went to a swamp, and we took a several-hour boat trip through the bayou, and it was like maybe an hour outside of New Orleans. I have never seen anything quite like it.
Yeah.
And so it was a great trip. New Orleans is a fascinating city. It's so full of history. If you're a history nerd, it's incredible. But my mind, my GMing brain got snagged on this swamp business, because in recent episodes, you and I have spent a lot of time talking about, how do you make travel interesting? How do you make exploration interesting? Before I went on this New Orleans trip and we spent time in the swamp, and our boat pilot like lived in the swamp. Like, he has a house you have to, you can't even get a boat to it. He has to like get out of the boat and wade to his house. Like, what? That's how hardcore swamp life this guy is.
Yeah.
He's like born on it. So we got all these constant tidbits about just like life on the swamp.
Yeah.
And so before I took this trip, if like the PCs in an RPG were making a cross country trip, let's say I had a big hex map of the world, and I'd be like, oh, you're going through a swamp hex that like, that slows it, it costs twice as many movement points to go through here.
Yeah.
And you have to make two encounter rolls, you know. I mean, that would be the extent of the flavor I could bring to swamp. But now, as soon as I took this tour, I was like, I've got to find like spin up myself like a D&D setting that's set in a swamp, because this is just too fun.
Yeah.
But now I have like all these questions and details I could throw out to the table while they're going through the swamp. Like, so for example, you know, like most games that have some sort of like an exploration or travel system will have you make like a roll, a hunting roll to get food, right? When you make those rolls, you know, you kind of picture like, oh yeah, whatever, you're going out and you're like shooting a deer or something like that, right? But this is a different biome. So like that hunting roll in a swamp looks totally different. And it has, in my opinion, opportunities for just like kind of quick setting building role playing. So because, you know, hunting in different environments requires gaining knowledge about what to hunt and how to do it, right? Because you can't just take your bow out and bring down a crocodile unless you've been told like this is the vulnerable point of the crocodile.
Yeah.
This is how you approach it to like reduce risk to yourself and expose that shot, right?
Yeah.
Or like you make a fishing roll. Well, like if you're in a forest environment, you know, you picture, oh, you're sitting by the bank of a stream, like, and you make a roll and you catch a fish. But here it's like, well, you won't catch anything like that, but if you know how to build like a trap and leave it overnight, and you knew if you've built it right, you've caught a whole bunch of crawfish or certain type of fish. And so you succeeded on your hunting roll, right? How did you know that you had to build a trap and how to build it, right?
That's such a good question.
Did you come across someone else's trap and like you reverse engineered how it worked and made your own? Did you talk to a local and they were like, oh, you put away that fishing rod, that won't do you any good, just put a upside down bucket in these sorts of places and check it the next morning to see what fell into it, you know? So anyway, I don't want to go on and on about it, but just to say, I don't think you need to build a whole huge dedicated system for traveling through a swamp or other biomes or whatever you want to call them. But if you like had like three questions that just called out why it's different to travel through this place, even stuff like simple, like, oh, you failed this, like, whatever, you failed your camping roll, you lose one of the supplies out of your backpack. Well, like, what does that mean, right? Did you did it fall in the swamp and like it's befouled and ruined? Did like a creature grab it while you had to put your pack down to get through a area and something grabbed it out of the pack, you know? Like, what was that creature, and how come you couldn't get it back, you know? So anyway, that's all I'm gonna say. Next time I do any kind of travel through a biosphere like that, but especially swamp, because I want to do that.
Yeah.
I'm just going to come up with like a couple questions, and I don't even care what the answers are. I just want the questions to make players think like, oh yeah, I probably couldn't just find a deer like wading through the swamp. So what did I shoot and kill, and how was I able to shoot it, or did I have to do something else to kill it?
Yeah, it's a super good question. Yeah, because that is exactly where my mind went. Yeah, you're doing a hunting role, so it's like, of course, yeah, I'm going to shoot a deer, or, I don't know, a bear, like whatever you'd imagine in like the Oregon Trail, right?
Video right, game. Right, exactly.
Right, like that's like, oh, I'm just going to get that wherever. But yeah, it's like, I mean, you bring up such a good point. It's like, yeah, like what would you even eat? And like, how would you prepare it? And like, yeah, those sorts of things. Yeah, it's, and then also like who are the sorts of people you would run across there too? Like, I mean, you mentioned like, you know, like a local, right? Like, so I mean, you now have a very vivid picture of an NPC, right? Of like this guy that's living deep in the swamp. Like, you can't even get there unless you know exactly where it is.
Yeah.
And you know, you're not gonna be able to get there, you know, unless you get out of your boat and like go wade. It's like, talk about like going off the grid entirely. Yeah,
totally.
Yeah. Right. And then like, yeah, just the sort of the knowledge that that person would have to have about the swamp in order to survive too. It's like, maybe you run across that guy and like, now you don't have to take twice as long to go through swamps, right? Because you've learned something totally from him, right? It's like, there's all sorts of little things like that. So I'm curious. It's like, well, yeah, it's like, I mean, you know, you should travel to be a well-rounded individual and all that sort of stuff, but you can also travel to, you know, be better at running role-playing games, I guess. That's also an option to you. Like, you know, one thing that like strikes me is like you, I'm sure you have like flown over swamplands or something like that, yeah, right? Like, and you've thought about them abstractly.
Yeah, and we've seen them in movies. It's not like I don't know what a swamp is, right?
Yeah, but like, it's a very different experience, like being it in is there. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, so I don't know if this would classify as swamp, but like when we went down to Florida one time, like probably, I don't know, 5 or 10 years ago or so, and we did a like, yeah, a boat tour of like the mangroves and stuff.
Okay.
And like, that was just like the most exotic thing I think I'd ever seen. Right. And it's still within the continental United States, technically. Right.
You know,
it's just like so bizarre. And then at one point, like we pulled over and like a bunch of raccoons came out of the trees to like come say hi. And like, you know, it turns out they were doing that because like the, you know, the people that run the boat company are feeding them all the time. Right?
Yeah.
It's like, they should not be doing this. Right. Like, so it's, yeah, but it's like, that's the sort of detail. It's like, I don't know, like if you're running a game and like, yeah, you're in that situation and it's like, there's an unexpected animal that shows up, but like, it makes sense in the ecology of this area.
Yeah. Yeah.
This area too, that it'd be there for this or that reason. And so, yeah, it's like, I mean, those little details are like, that's what you remember from trips. And like, that's what I think you can making travel memorable. It's like those little details are the things.
Yeah. Yeah. That
absolutely make your travel sequence better. So.
All right. Well, hey, thanks for listening to my,
my
trip report.
Yeah, I want to hear, we need to transition to our topic, but I want to hear more about that, I think, because it sounds like there's lots of cool
stuff. I have some more gamey thoughts that came out of that trip that I'll share in a future episode.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, let's, so the one transition that we have, the topic though for today, if you're ready to jump into it, Chris. So this is, as many topics on the show are, this is a very selfish question, because this is a question I need answered, and I've got about like 2 weeks to find a good answer for this, so... This is a topic we have approached, but never tackled head on, I don't think. I went back through all of our many episodes. We've been doing this for a while. I don't know if you realize
that. Yeah, it's kind of a long time. At this point, I think it's okay if we repeat ourselves. So
yes. So we have talked about a lot about running one-shots in different situations. We've talked about running one-shots for people that don't know the rules very well. We've talked about... So we have talked about that a lot, but we have never, I don't think, explicitly said, how do you run a game for people who aren't and really never will be gamers?
Yeah.
But they've heard that D&D is fun and they know you're into it. And so they're like, will you run a game for us?
Mm-hmm.
So what does that look like? And like, let's just get out of the way the super obvious answer, which is like, you know, don't overthink it. You know, you want everyone to have a fun time. Mm-hmm. Don't stress about things. Don't overdo it. I said don't overthink it, but if I were the sort of person to not overthink it, I would not have a podcast about it.
This would be a much, much shorter podcast. We would have done like 2 episodes and been done. Yeah.
So with the general disclaimer that, I'm going to keep it simple. I'm going to focus on fun.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to stress about stuff I might stress about with a more experienced group of people.
Mm-hmm.
What are some things I should keep in mind or aim for or avoid, do you think, to make sure that everyone goes home saying, that's not for me, but I'm glad we did it?
Yeah, that's good to sort of have your goal in the end is like, yeah, like either, oh, I love that, I want to do that all the time, or like, yeah, oh, that was at least fun.
I mean, right? I certainly will not turn down anyone who goes home and is like, can't stop thinking about it. Yeah. It's like, I've got to get into this, but I don't think that'll happen.
Yeah. So like, I've run games for a lot of people who are new to playing tabletop games. And I really enjoy it because I know you've had this experience too. Like when someone doesn't know, quote unquote, how to play these games, they tend to do things that are just very surprising, right? Like if you play with a bunch of gamers who like sort of know what they're doing, like they will surprise you, but they will surprise you sort of within the bounds of what you understand.
Yep.
Right. Like they might
surprise you. They know how invisibility works in the game system. So they'll come up with something creative, but it won't be outside the box.
Yeah. It's not going to be like, so outside the box that you have to like do what you do with new gamers where you have to really pause and say like why wouldn't I allow that, like that does sound cool or like and like the reality is like it comes down to like, well, okay, but if you can do that, then I don't know, you're gonna do that all the time and like you can't just like keep on blowing up everything that you come across or whatever, right? So like there is that element to it of just like a basic like not understanding sort of the power and complexity of the rule system to where like they might be like, oh, like, well, I can like, why can't I just make a poison that kills everybody? It's like, well, because there's like, if we allow that, then everything gets really complicated, then every time you're eating something you're always checking for poison, and it's just like, yeah, okay, like there's no poison in here or whatever, right? Like so there's that side of it. The other thing that I've run across is so there's that side of it, and I think that's fun, and I don't think you should overthink that too much. You can just gently correct that into sort of like what you want the game to be, or just roll with it and be like, oh, that's awesome, like let's kind of go with that.
And some of the things you've just mentioned, they, you know, the reason they're a problem is they're really only a problem if you're going to be playing again and you have established that the level one hover spell lets you fly around like Superman. That's gonna like have a long-term unbalancing thing, but who really cares, right? If it's just, if this is really the only time you're gonna play, who cares if you overpower something, right?
Who really cares, other than they're like, oh, I really love that, I want to play again. It's like,
I have some real, before you do, I need to continue.
Okay,
it has a duration of 7 seconds and you can only move at 5 miles per hour, so
and I apologize, but there are these things called spell slots which we didn't talk about at all. So there's that side of it. I think the other thing that comes to mind immediately is like sometimes I've played games with people who like also don't understand sort of like the narrative complexity of like what you're playing, to the point where they're just like, well, I'm just gonna leave the situation and go do this other thing entirely. And like that, I think, is probably the thing that you might want to address more strongly than the mechanics and the rules, if that makes sense. So it's like, it's really basic stuff. Like I would make sure there's an understanding of like, you are a party working together. Like we're not going to have PvP, you know, unless that's what everybody wants at the table, right? Like understanding that. And then also like, we are doing this adventure together. So like, it'll be helpful if you sort of stay with us. Like, you can split the party, but like, one of you cannot decide to get like, I'm going to leave the dungeon and go, you know, start a family in another town, like over there.
Yep.
It's like, okay, that's cool, we could explore that as like a long-term game, but like the thing that we're playing, right? Like, so there's those sorts of things which I think are helpful to do, because like I have had players in games where they just like, there's like, well, I'm not interested in this for whatever reason, or I've just decided I want to see what I can do, and then they try to go in a totally opposite direction, like physically moving their character somewhere else to go like see what's over there. It's like, and then you're sort of like inventing this whole side thing while everybody else is having fun. Fun over here. Yeah. So, those are the things that come to mind immediately. Yeah.
So here's a question. Assume that the system I'm using is, you know, pretty simple. So it's not lasers and feelings simple, but it's not like full 5e D&D or something.
Yeah.
Should character creation be something a part of the experience, or should it not?
How many people do you think you're gonna be playing with?
About five.
So if you think about it in terms of, so like if you did, I would, you know, if you're playing D&D, absolutely not, you give them pretense, right? Because like if you think about it, like, so if you have five people and you have to spend 5 minutes with each person working on what their character sheet is, right?
It's already a half hour gone.
It's already a half hour, just like gone, right? Yeah, and that, like, that's fine if that's like the fun thing to do as part of it. But I would say, like, yeah, so if your character sheet, if the complexity of it is down to just 5 minutes or something everybody can do, you know, all together, like, yeah, maybe do that as part of it. I also think, though, like, if they are brand new to gaming, all the stuff, like, there are things I think we take for granted as gamers that just sort of make sense to us that don't necessarily make intuitive sense to everybody else, right? Mm. So, like, you're going to have to explain every stat pretty exhaustively to them,
yeah,
versus just being like, oh, here's your character sheet, like,
yeah, we'll and talk wisdom about wisdom is different from intelligence,
yeah, like, I mean, of course it is, right? Like, yeah. And then, yeah, right, so like, if you can just give them that and it's like, we'll talk about the numbers when they come up, I think that's usually a better route. Like, there's going to be, you know, people will want to know everything up front, but like, taking away some of those decisions, maybe giving them one or two. I think I mentioned this, like, we were chatting on the Discord a little bit. Like, yeah, just like, let them pick their character name, let them pick like one other thing.
Yeah, well, that was going to be my follow-up. So what are, so sorry, I have a cat jumping up here on the table because I didn't feed it lunch yet and it's pretty mad about that.
Put him on the stream.
Yeah, so, okay, come on, get out of here. What is the most fun? I know this is a subjective question, but what's the most fun part of character creation? Like, I know it's not, all right, you all have 15 gold pieces. Here's the couple of pages of equipment. Buy your starting equipment. I know that's not fun.
Mm-hmm.
If I were to have some kind of character creation, like maybe where I have like most of the characters done, but I've left some things for them to do. Mm-hmm. What are the fun choices, I guess, that you're making?
I think that what I've seen new players find the most fun is choosing, like, the class of the character, right? Sort of like the style of the character, right? If you will, like, oh, this person's really sneaky. This person can cast magic. This person, you know, can swing a big sword, right? Like, giving them, like, those options. And then, like I mentioned, letting them choose their name, but that can also be really hard for people to come up with. So like providing them like, okay, so you get to choose what kind of person you are. And here's a list of some cool names that associate with that person.
I used when Powered by the Apocalypse games came out, this is the first time I'd seen it. Mm-hmm. I resented that like their character sheets made you circle one of like seven names, you know, like, and I was like, what the heck? Like picking a name is... Yeah. He's a cool thing. But now I get it, right?
It's yeah.
Okay. Anyway, sorry.
There's always like, even with like experienced gamers, I find this too. It's like, okay, like, tell me what your name is. And like, everybody sort of freezes, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, and everybody either feels like they came up with a perfect thing or like it's the worst possible name ever, you know? Like,
yeah.
I've finally come to the conclusion that like, you know, it doesn't really matter that much, right? So like, that's taken a lot of pressure off, but it also feels like this very final thing. It's almost like, yeah, you could see yourself asking the GM, hey, can I change these stats around? I didn't get that quite right. But you can't see yourself ever asking the GM, can I change my name?
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
Here's where I'm leaning, that I'll have characters built up for each of like the main classes or roles.
Mm-hmm.
And I will have them pick a class and then pick what kind of like species that is. Mm-hmm. And the systems I have in mind, the species choice, you know, it just basically means putting a +2 or something and on a stat, and then you get one thematic special ability, which we can jot down quickly. I think, do you think that that's enough? Like, do they need to roll their stats or pick their skills or like, okay.
No, yeah. I don't think so. I think if someone wants that, maybe you could, you know, walk them through that. But I think for the most part, people will be really happy to like, just getting the character sheet's going to be bewildering enough.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And then, like, again, someone might be really interested and they might want like want to roll because they've heard about that's what you do. Maybe you can do that for them. But most people are just going to be like, oh, cool. Like, I get to just be this person. Yeah.
So anything else in particular that I should avoid? And let's say, because we've discussed it before, you know, I will be skipping the hour of like talking to the person hiring you, and I'll be dropping the characters off at the beginning of the adventure with a mission in place. Is there anything else I could avoid that would be okay to have in like a game with more experienced players or a longer term campaign?
It's a really good question. I think, yeah, I would, I would try to like not give them, yeah, like your instinct there of just like, yeah, just drop them straight in, I think is good. I think if you can just give them like, give them sort of the stuff that you might ask your long-term players to sort of figure out together, like just give that to them. So like, yeah, just tell them you are all together because you all, you know, were approached by the same person who gave you the same quest and you all happen to show up at the same place at the same time. Right. Yeah. Like just, yeah, fill in some of those details for them that they can bounce off of. If that makes sense. So rather than asking them to make a lot of decisions up front, like ask them, like give them the stuff that they can kind of interact with. That said, I would also very quickly, you know, like maybe you do a quick battle, like, you know, quick encounter, mm-hmm. like combat encounter, something like that. But I would also seed in the idea of like, okay, so you each look around, like what's one thing you notice in the area, mm-hmm. like kind of doing that shared storytelling. So yep. I think like, to me, that's where the light bulbs start going off of like, oh, this is a thing that we can affect and change mm-hmm. and change. And I think that's probably like, that's the thing that I would want to make sure that anyone who plays with me comes out of is like, oh, this is a shared storytelling experience, right? Like we just told the story together. This wasn't just something that was sort of handed to me and that I just like, yeah, got to have this fun thing and Andy did all the work. It's like, yeah, oh, like we all kind of came up with this together.
I've also been thinking I'm gonna allow myself the freedom to quickly fast forward through stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, we're coming up on 10 p.m. so you guys have a bunch of other adventures getting through the labyrinth, but then mm-hmm. you've emerged at like the boss's temple. Like, you know, that's something that I normally would really struggle to want to do in a game, but I'm going to be ready if we're just meandering around, because this is a thing, you know, they're not coming back, there's not going to be a session two, mm-hmm. we can't finish the adventure later, so there's a little bit of extra pressure to like, let's make sure we wrap this up. I mean, that's pressure in any one shot, but this one in particular.
No, I think that's really wise. Yeah, if you can sort of leave them on the like, you know, the big set piece encounter or whatever that is, I think that's going to be a good way to do it. Yeah, that's super exciting. I'm glad you get a chance to do this.
Any final words of wisdom here before we wrap up?
I think you are comfortable with doing like silly voices and stuff at the table. I would do that.
Excellent.
Right, like give them the full experience, the full experience there of just like, yeah, like how silly and fun it can be.
That is okay. That's actually a good reminder. Okay.
Cool. All right, well we gotta wrap up. But yeah, so this has been really good. Yeah, thanks for bringing that topic. I'm anxious to hear how it went.
I'll report back.
Yeah, cool. All right, well, we have been Roll for Topic. We're part of the Roll for It Media Podcasting Network. Our sister show, The Splat Book, is on hiatus right now, but you can always go and listen to their back catalog. It's all good. I think I've heard every single episode, and I love it. So, yeah, go check them out. I think they'll be back at the end of the summer. They've all got some busy summers. And you can also go check out Andy and John on Zombie Strains. I almost called it Zombie Cast, but Zombie Strains, which is good. And you guys just wrapped up your first season, right?
We did. We have covered up through the 1940s. We've watched every zombie movie up through the 40s.
That is amazing. You know, kudos to you for sticking to that format. I know it's going to get much harder to to rip through the decades
from here.
This is
easy when there's only one zombie movie every 3 years. Instead of like 47 zombie movies every year, which will be the case in like 1986.
So. Yeah. But I mean, that's still pretty cool. Yeah. So I mean, it feels like you got some good foundational knowledge of where it all came from. So,
oh, for sure.
Yeah. I've not listened to you. I know there's a wrap up episode for your first season, so I got to listen to that still. Sounded like you did a bunch of games and fun stuff.
Well, our producer ambushed us with a bunch of trivia quizzes, so you can listen and hear how badly we did.
Nice.
It was very fun.
Yeah, that's great. Cool. All right, yeah, we'll definitely go check them out. So I think that does it for us. I've been Chris Osman.
I've been Andy Rao.
And remember, if your players are having fun, you're a great GM.